from KQED.
The state's water managers rolled out a plan this week to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from moving water around the state. If that sounds odd, turns out that moving and treating water takes a lot of electricity. But the reverse is also true. This morning, in part two of our series, Water and Power, Lauren Sommer and Dan Brecke report for our Climate Watch project on the water it takes to keep the lights on.
So at my house, I get a water bill and an energy bill, and the two don't really seem related.
But when it comes to water and power, you can't have one without the other. Yesterday, we talked about how water is pumped hundreds of miles around California, and that takes a lot of electricity.
And today, we're talking about how we need water to make that electricity. In fact, every time you use your clothes dryer or listen to the radio, it's just like turning on your faucet. Here, I'll show you how they work together.
With a tea kettle?
Yep, I'm turning on my stove. Wait just a moment.
Steam.
Right, steam is what drives our power industry. Of course, it happens at a much larger scale.
Okay, watch your head.
I'm at the Gateway Generating Station, a big natural gas power plant in the Northeast Bay Area. Steve Royal of PG&E is giving me a tour through the maze of pipes and compartments.
The combustion turbine is in this gray compartment here.
Now, this plant looks complicated, but making power is pretty simple. Step number one, burn natural gas, which produces a lot of heat.
You've got 1700 degree exhaust energy or waste heat.
That heat hits pipes that are filled with water.
And that water is boiled off to create steam.
That's step number two, make steam to turn a steam turbine, which is attached to a generator. It's the water that's making the power. But water has another job in power plants. That steam, even after it makes power, is still hot. So most power plants use water to cool it down.
You've got to have the ability to cool everything down so the cycle can continue and your equipment doesn't overheat.
Nuclear plants and coal plants use water the same way, in some cases, millions of gallons a year. In fact, nationwide, power plants need more fresh water than farms do. Newer power plants reuse water, but a lot of it is lost to evaporation, which means it has to be replenished.
Typically, water's been the most abundant resource available.
But that's changing.
There is a general understanding that the era of abundance is over.
Heather Cooley is with the Pacific Institute, an Oakland-based think tank focused on water issues.
Water resources are limited, and there is a growing demand. We have a growing population in the West, and we have a growing economy.
And then there's the climate, which is changing.
The climate models suggest that water availability will be more variable, so we'll have wetter years, we'll have drier years, we'll have a smaller snowpack.
Cooley says some power plants are already feeling the effects of a tightening water supply.
We're seeing in areas where if there is a drought, where plants are either forced to curtail their generation or turn off completely. And we're seeing plants that are not being built because of concern about the long-term availability of water supply.
Cooley says there are ways that power plants can cut their water impact. They can use recycled water. And
we can look at less water-intensive renewable energy systems, so looking at wind and at solar panels.
But it turns out some renewables need water, too. In a parched corner of California's Mojave Desert, construction equipment shimmers in the midday heat. These 3,500 acres near the Nevada border are the site of the Ivanpah Solar Project.
The Ivanpah Project, when it's operational, it will be the largest solar thermal project operating in the world.
That's Joseph Desmond with Bright Source Energy. And you'll notice he said solar thermal. It's different from the solar panels you see on rooftops. The plant is a huge field of mirrors that are specially angled to focus the sun's heat at a tower 400 feet tall.
Inside the top of that tower is a boiler. All of that energy then is used to create high-temperature, high-pressure steam in excess of 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit.
That spins a steam turbine, and bingo, you've got electricity. Now, just like a natural gas plant, that steam has to be cooled back down, which is done with, you guessed it, water. But in the middle of a desert,
you have to dig down, I want to say, about 840 feet.
So the Ivanpah plant will use a new technology called dry cooling. Instead of using water, the plant uses massive fans to blow air over the pipes of hot steam.
Air cooling allows us to reduce the water consumption by as much as 90%.
But there's a catch. Dry cooling uses more energy, so the plant isn't as efficient. It's even less efficient when it's hot out, and it costs more to build.
can range between 1 and 5% more. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but when you're competing and every penny counts, it's an important factor.
Three of the seven solar thermal plants planned in California won't use dry cooling. But Desmond says even though the state needs renewable power, he doesn't think agencies would approve that today.
Instead, we'd like to use water cooling, getting a permit for that would be challenging, to say the least.
The same could be true for fossil fuel plants, too, as California's future water supply is called into question more and more. For the California Report, I'm Lauren Sommer.
Our series Water and Power continues next week with a look at how a shrinking snowpack might affect hydropower production and your electric bill. Meanwhile, don't miss our illustrated guides online at californiareport.org/climatewatch.